Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. I'm Charlie Carter, and I'm here with Tim Little and Andy Stearns. Let's jump into the conversation. Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast. Hello, gentlemen.
Shalom.
So I can't say shalom, but I don't know what to say.
The last episode we deliberated upon your greeting.
That's true.
As good morning or mooing like a cow.
What's up, Irene? Or the mooing like a cow. Listeners, I just have to tell you, here's what I'll do. Funny story. I walked into the room today to record and Charlie said, welcome. Just totally. And it was like the episode was starting. And so it's Charlie, your voice is so known from the podcast that when I heard you say welcome, I thought of our podcast.
Yikes. Yeah.
It has a ring to it.
He has a ring to it.
Oh!
You're getting married soon.
Well played. I am getting married soon. So. We're going to have to mess our recording schedule up for that. But honestly, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. As you should be. That is a good sentiment.
And I mean, I'm marrying a listener.
You are
horrendous.
Yikes.
All right. So here's what's in this episode. We're going to have some sponsors, some announcements, some weekly wisdom. We're going to do books and business as always. And then the main topic of the episode is from Thinkling Little on Proverbs 31. And so,
what?
Whoosh. Oh. Let's talk about some sponsors. So, we had someone send us some coffee. We don't know who that someone is, but we have some Happy Place.
Yeah. Happy Place coffee. It is sweet, berries, bright, and bouncy. And
just like me.
It is. It came in the mail to my home yesterday. So I don't know who sent this, but do you notice it's from Georgia. Like this is roasted in Dawsonville, Georgia.
So it's good.
It's really good.
So it could be your friend.
It could be George from Georgia. I don't know.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
It could also be.
Well, we've got more in Georgia.
We have
than
more
him.
Friends in Georgia.
Jeff number one.
That's right. I forgot about that.
It could have even been Jeff number two visiting Georgia with his wife and then getting this and sending it.
There's some other people in Georgia we know too.
Who?
Aren't the Sturgises down there?
That's Jeff number one.
Jeff number one.
Oh, okay.
And then Jeff number two's wife was a Sturgis. Now she's a Dillard. Yeah.
Never mind. So whoever this is who sent it to us, it is really good. It's a light roast. It does taste rather fruity. I would say, I don't know, this is pretty good coffee. This is one of my favorite bags I've had in a while.
I'm going to rescind my comment. I think this coffee more aptly describes our podcast rather than me. Bright and bouncy.
That's right. I'm gonna allow that rescinding, Charlie.
We're the brightest and bounciest podcast
right,
I know.
That's really
anyway,
are.
Also want to mention our normies. So our normal sponsors, Brickhouse Coffee Co., Porchlight Coffee House, and Blue Cow, the friendliest herd around. Here are a couple
heard
of
that.
Not a sponsor, but
you keep know, moving.
Kinda, hey,
it's
I thought
like
you're
an indirect sponsor because they pay me.
Your comment on the sponsor was very moving.
Move on.
So,
let's see if you could see his face.
So, we are currently, as of today, at 131 reviews on Apple. That's a 5-star review with a comment. And we are going to be pushing for 200. We really want to get that to 200. That's really helpful for the podcast.
Our 200th episode is coming up.
It is.
200 for 200.
That would be beautiful if we could reach 200 in the next 13 weeks. So we're going to do a giveaway. Might I say a spicy giveaway.
Oh, yes.
And spicy with my intent, which is like interesting and fun. We're going to do a giveaway. When we get to 200 Apple reviews, and to be eligible for that giveaway, which might include bookstore gift cards, it might include books themselves, it might include clothing, all of those things, to be eligible, you have to have left a 5-star review with a comment. So you can't just click the 5 stars. You have to add and write a comment. And when we hit 200, we're going to pull those 200 names. And away we go. That's Boom. Who we're going to give stuff to.
That's right.
And so if you have not already left us a 5-star review and a comment in Apple, go do that. If you already have, you can recruit people you know, get a friend, a family member to log in to Apple Podcasts, leave a review. And if they're like, I don't care about this, you're like, hey, I just want another ticket in the 200 giveaway. So please leave us a 5-star review on Apple and leave a comment. And keep sending us questions. We are going to be recording talk number 3 soon. And we like those episodes where we get to interact a little bit longer form, answering your questions. So keep sending us questions. Andy, did you know?
What?
We have an email.
No.
Where someone with their own email.
What?
Could directly communicate questions to us.
But how did we come up with a name for this email? Like, what would it be?
It would be thinklingspodcast@gmail.com.
Wow. Charlie, that's so creative. I don't know if I'll actually remember.
Move on.
Tim is so tired of this.
Tim is...
He doesn't have SD Smith here to back him up this time.
Friend of the podcast.
Horrendous.
So maybe this is a little too bright and bouncy for Tim. All right. Let's move on to...
Can I say
wisdom.
One thing about... SD, yeah, shout out to SD. I don't know about you guys, but he asked for my email after that episode, and he had met my kids, and he literally sent us a box with everything he's ever published on paperback.
Oh, wow.
We have all the paperback copies of the Green Ember series.
Oh, that was really kind.
Jack Zulu and Mooses with Bazookas.
And your address is 2031 Northwest 35th Lane,
ooh,
apartment 31.
Ooh, that was not my address.
Oh, right.
Oh, man.
You guys are so horrendous. Can we go on?
Yeah, I don't know if you'll ever hear this, but he was super fun, and we will be planning to have him back.
He was really kind. So. Yeah.
Kindred soul.
I did. I love that. That was like my favorite interview. Yeah. So
I do think I don't want to besmirch any of our other guests, but
yeah,
that was a really good one.
Yeah, we've had a lot of great guests, and he was one of a wonderful coterie. Weekly wisdom.
Yeah. So I was reading in Psalm 37 today for my devotions. And it's a pretty famous psalm. Most people know verse 4. I'm just going to read the first 4 verses, but then I want to talk about verse 3 in one specific instance. So verse number 1 says, "Fret not yourself because of evildoers, and be not envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb." Now, if you read the rest of the psalm, there's actually quite a bit about what's going to happen to the wicked. It's really encouraging, especially if you're dealing with someone who is wicked and you've felt the effects of that wickedness, and then you yourself are trying to be faithful. And so this one is an encouragement to you not to trust in the outcome right now, but to trust in the Lord. Now, verse 3 captures that really nicely. And I'm just want to talk about the first half. He ends that and he says, "Trust in the Lord and do good." And so I think that in the context, he's probably seeing all these people who are succeeding and they're being wicked. And here he is doing what's good. And is this really working? And so, man, that might be you today. You might need to hear, just trust in the Lord and do good. Now, for some of you, I'm going to apply this slightly differently. You have a very active conscience that accuses and excuses at weird times. You never know, is this okay? Is this not okay? I'm afraid, like, maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe I'm doing this for a wrong motive. And well, God is greater than your heart. And you don't just try to avoid negative consequences or doing the wrong thing. You do. But the Christian life is one of fearing the Lord because you are omniscient, trusting in Him, and then doing good. So today, what is it, the good that God wants you to do? You may not be able to do that perfectly, but you know what you can do? You can trust Him and you can go do the good. So
I love how general the command is. Mm-hmm. It's like, what should I do? Well, do good.
Yeah. Do good.
It's like so general.
Tim, where could I go to find some ideas of what the good looks like?
Oh, like the rest of the chapter or
there you go.
Galatians 5 or
ooh, Great Commission. Oh.
Hey.
Great commandment.
It's Romans like all 12 over the too. Place.
Yeah.
The Bible.
But here the command is just so general.
Yeah.
Do good.
And I think for someone whose conscience is always bothering
yeah.
them, the thing that you're going to do, is it something that God would think is good?
Right.
If it is, don't fret.
Right.
Maybe there's something better. Maybe you're going to do something wrong. You don't know. Tim, it's like you don't have light. What right. do you do? Trust God. Follow the Lord.
Do good. Love it.
Yeah. And I think too, God knows, you know, like God knows yep. what you know. He knows what you don't know. Yep. And if He wants you to know something you don't know, He'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
He'll help you see that in your life. You don't have to be worrying about things that are out of your control that way. But
I do think, I don't know if this is the best illustration, But if you want God to bless you and direct you, he can't steer your car if your car is not moving. It doesn't mean just be active to be active, but like do something good and he'll help you along the way. I don't know if that's, I mean, I don't know where I would go to the Bible to prove that, but I do think there's commands to obey by faith and trusting God. And then we trust God for the outcome. And if he needs to direct us our steps, we've got to be actively trusting him first, I think.
Yeah, I do. I like that illustration.
I don't know where I got that. It's not original to me though.
So. Sure. All right.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books. And Tim, you can go first.
So I got a couple of new books. I got Exodus 1 through 18, volume 1. This is kind of dumb. Okay, the name of the book is Exodus 1 through 18, but then it's only volume 1.
So like the next volume is Exodus 19 through...
No, this is only chapters 1 through 10.
What? Wait. Is this like...
They have volume 2, which is chapters 11 through 18.
Hold. Okay,
they've done this to me before. It's like a ripoff.
Wait. So Genesis 1 through 11 is like a unit. Yeah. Proverbs 1 through 9 is like a unit. Yeah. Is Genesis 1 through, or Exodus 1 through 18 a unit?
I mean, kind of, but 19 and 20 is like the covenant. It's really 1 through 24 is the unit.
So they don't even have, okay, that's what I was wondering. But if there's not a unit, then dude, I'm totally
I know what they
you.
Did. So you did 1 through 18, and somebody's supposed to write a commentary on 1 through 18. But then guess what?
Oh, they wrote too much.
They wrote too much. So what did they do?
Well, a PhD,
they split it in half.
A PhD student would have to rewrite his dissertation.
Yeah,
shorter.
Exactly. So anyway, I got Exodus 1 through 18, volume 1, which is only chapters 1 through 12 by Davies. And this is like an expensive book, but I'm teaching Exodus next week. So I am trying to build up my library and do additional study.
That was a beautiful publishing eye roll we just got from Tim.
Okay. And then I got Every Woman a Theologian by Felicia Masonheimer. So I talked about one of her books recently. Know what you believe, live it confidently, communicate it graciously. Chapter 1 is bibliology. Chapter 2 is theology, like the doctrine of God. Chapter 3 is cosmology, Christology, soteriology, pneumatology, ecclesiology, eschatology. So what is this?
Cosmology?
Yeah, that's an interesting addition, but otherwise...
It's like an apologetic style chapter?
Yeah, so I haven't read it yet, but that's a new book.
I'm going to look at that.
Yeah, take a look. It's basically a theology book for women, which... Anyway, I'm going to reserve all
like,
thoughts.
Unless it's like cosmetics or something. I'll figure it out.
I'm going to reserve all thoughts. I think it's just on creation. Okay, then my book that I'm actually going to talk about is Joshua by John Goldengay. And Goldengay has said some really wonky things. And Ben Hartwig has been going through Joshua. And he said, you need to talk about this book. Because he's basically, there's this denial of everything historically in the Old Testament. This is like the gateway, okay? You got Genesis 1, oh, that's not real. Oh, Genesis 2, there's not a historic Adam, okay? Genesis 3, this paradigmatic fall of man, so on and so forth. Genesis 12, this man, Abraham. Okay, so here we go. Page 160. Actually, I'm going to go to 161. So this is the battle of Ai. Okay, so Ai. Is that a historic location? Was there ever a battle of Ai? The Ai, which compares with the Gilgal, seems to mean the heap. The place was a heap of ruins, like Jericho, one that had once been impressive and important, but was not so now. It may have been a village settlement, again like Jericho in Joshua's day. It certainly was soon afterward. Next point. Thus, this is not a story about a literal event any more than the Jericho story was. Many names in it carry a metaphorical meaning, which adds to the impression that it's not just a literal story. So what is he denying in this commentary? Ai is heap.
Huh.
It has metaphorical meaning as a heap because they wiped it out.
Okay.
So it has a spiritual truth, but as far as its historicity, in historical character, guess what?
It's not true.
It's not true. So he's denying the fall of Jericho. He's denying the fall of Ai. So anyway, red flags on Joshua by John Goldengay. I wanted to share that in my books and business. I'm done.
So I have not read much this week, but I'm currently reading the section on creation here. So cosmology, it's creation, sin, and it's like the fall.
The fall.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. And so she's starting off talking about
creation. Just so you know, Andy just took the book I talked
about, literally
by Felicia Mazenheimer, and that's what he's talking about, like, right now for his books and business. Go ahead.
No, no, I didn't want to talk about
that. No, I love this. Go for it.
She's walking through. So I'm just, this is like apologetic stuff. I'm like, what's she doing here? She quotes Lewis on Magician's Nephew when Didgeridoo and all them get dumped into the created world. It's interesting that she starts with C.S. Lewis and she's trying to say, like, there's lots of meaning and purpose in the world. Okay. All right. Then she talks about theories of creation and she's going through the young earth and the old earth view. And then the modified gap theory. And so she's just saying, like, there's, so let's see, talks about day age, young earth, and modified gap. She does, oh, and then theistic evolution. And then she says, after she kind of gives you like a paragraph summary of each, she says, each of these creation theories has its weaknesses, some scientifical, some biblical. The passage about creation were written thousands of years ago in a different time. This doesn't make the creation narrative any less trustworthy for teaching about God today, but it should make us scientifically inquisitive. How does God reveal himself in the physical world? And then at the end, so anyways, I'm very curious where she's going to go with this.
She's not going to go anywhere. Who's the publisher? Look at who the publisher is.
Thomas Nelson.
Oh, it's work. Oh, yeah. It's Tommy.
Yeah, it's HarperCollins. So it's going to be watered down because they want to appeal to the broadest audience possible. So I highly doubt she'll take
is
the
she,
view.
Is she Southern Baptist?
She lives in Michigan, so probably not.
That's very interesting.
I'm not sure where she is.
I think exactly. She sort of had a reductionist, like what the church fathers saying, what all of historians say is God created it. And that's the important part. Sorry, everyone. That's just, I couldn't
No, that was beautiful. Okay. And we'll talk about it some more after I work through it some.
I like the idea.
Yeah, I do too. But think about like that idea. Okay, you have a woman writing a systematic theology to women. Yep. So is that kind of a neat idea?
Yeah.
Okay, but then how big is that book and how developed is the theology?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and like, love the idea, but we're probably not going to like the execution.
We'll find out. Tim's going to read it and let us know.
I would say that too. Do you have it in the bookstore?
No, I just got that one because I want to look at it first.
And I wouldn't discount the whole book just on those four paragraphs.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am like, oh, interesting how she handled
that's this. Totally expected. She'd present the views and then just walk away from the conversation. Yep.
And maybe later it'll come up. But okay, so for my books and business, I am almost finished with Clear Winter Nights by Trevin Wax. I love that book. I'm almost ready to give it a ranking. But I need to finish it. But it's been a great story. I wish I could have read it more consistently. And then I'm reading other books, but they're all like related to premarital counseling. So the devotional, the preparing for engagement devotional I mentioned, I will say that has picked up and been much better. It's covenant. So there's like covey language all over. But he asks some really good questions that I think as like a guy who has some experience
is
in this.
Is it the Wayne Mack one? Or is it?
No, Mike McKinley. Oh, okay. I can't that was the one.
Oh, yeah. That's the one we talked about last week.
And all I'll say, what I would say is some of the questions are good. So like at one point he brought up that your spouse can't fulfill you and make your life totally happy. That's, you only find your satisfaction in God. And then the question is, what are ways you think you might make your spouse the one to give you that ultimate satisfaction? And so I think some of those questions are really good. But I do think, and so I would recommend it to the discerning reader who understands covenant theology and won't be taken by it. But then I would also say that probably it's something that you should read in your engagement, and then you should read it like 2 years in. Because that thing I just said, it's like going to plant a seed, but you might not remember it at all times. So it sounds really good, and it's good to be going through it with someone else in our life. I don't know if I just pick it up. So I'm not reading a lot because it's the final exam week and I'm way behind on my grading. And
you know,
I got 2 weeks of summer school. I got a wedding coming up.
Yeah, you're teaching some classes.
Yeah, it's a bit busy.
Yeah, so I'll do what Tim did. I'll talk about one thing mainly, but then I'll talk about a couple other things too. So you should all, I'm gonna incite our Thinklings listeners to accomplish a task. There's a gentleman that I would really love to get as a guest, but I'm not sure exactly how to get in contact with him. However, I did leave a comment on his recent YouTube video, and he liked my comment.
Is this your spirit animal?
This is my spirit animal, Malcolm Guite.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
And so you
left
should...
Left field.
It's not left... It connects. So I have been reading Fantastes by George MacDonald, and I'm pronouncing that how... Oh. Malcolm Guite pronounces it. It's just we don't have Narnia and we don't have Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings if George MacDonald did not write this book first. And it's just a fun fairy fiction. There's Ents. You know, he meets the beech tree woman. It's like, it's an Ent wife.
I haven't I read that one and I didn't really care for it. I need to give it another shot.
You liked Lilith more.
I did. I liked Lilith more.
No one should like Lilith.
I haven't read Lilith by George MacDonald. So
you haven't?
No.
I'm joking, by the way. It's a comment about the person. Yeah,
because she's the bad girl.
So,
let's horrendous.
She's like Satan.
Start itching closer to back on track. So he was reading this and he was commenting about how he also has a desk, a secretary that the main character of Fantastis gets from his dad. And that's how he like gets into fairy world. And Malcolm has this video where he's like looking through his old desk and he finds this old manuscript of a poem about Narnia that he wrote like 30, 40 years ago as like a young teacher. He had assigned it to his students to write a poem about Narnia. And his most recent video is him reading through his Narnia poem and talking about the rhyming scheme. And like, it's incredibly fun. It's about 10, 15 minutes. Thinklings listeners, if you're listening to this, go and comment on that video and say, you know, you should talk to the Thinklings about that and just start planting some seeds there. Anyway, been reading Fantastes. I've also been reading another Carolyn Weber title that still not sure. Now, this would be a spicy book in the true form of the word spicy. It is called Sex [S2] Yep. [S1] And the City of God, a memoir of love and longing.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah.
Yep, we appreciate that.
Just for those who are wondering about our semantics here.
Some dangerous puns could arise from this.
Some spicy puns. That's right. Anyway, so she kind of picks up her memoir of where she, in Surprised by Oxford, it's her freshman year or first year at Oxford. And then she kind of picks up the story from there. And this story is about, as it says, a memoir of love and longing. So it's talking about her a broken home, her relationship with her dad, and then how that then melds. She's not directly connecting them, but then she melds it into like her dating relationships and who she eventually marries. And at first, Tim and I were both a little curious where she's going to land on some things. And she has some really good parts of this where she's realizing that her expectations might be wrong. She needs to reorder her loves and says that phrase specifically to reorder the loves. Wow. And so been pleasantly surprised with that one. Probably have I'll reserve all comments for the final review. But then the thing I was just reading this morning that really intrigued me was, so this is Goldsmith. He's a guy in the 1800s. And these are his essays. I think he was a pastor in London. I don't know a lot about him. He was referenced in another book on poetry, and he has an essay on poetry. And so I found his compilation of essays, and I've been reading through them. And there's three or four of them that are very intriguing to me. One of them is taste. So like, how do you, like, what is taste, like, aesthetically? Then the very next essay is the cultivation of taste. Ooh. And then the next ones are like poetry and writing poetry. And so he has this comment about taste, and I think it's helpful to think through what it is. Because he throws out a question, like, do you have to be intelligent to really enjoy art or, you know, good poems or good writing? And he's going to separate the two, that there is a capacity God-given by nature that people have differing levels of capacity, so different skills and minds. And he differentiates that from the need and task of cultivating taste. So regardless of your natural ability to understand or grasp things, there is a need for you to be able to recognize what is beautiful. And so here's his, there's just a quote about it. He says, "A man may have capacity to acquire what is called learning and philosophy, but he must have also sensibility before he feels those emotions with which taste receives the impressions of beauty." So taste is connected to your capacity, but they're not directly connected. And that regardless of your capacity with reading, with writing, with thinking, you need to develop, cultivate a sensibility to see beauty and truth and goodness. And so this is just about five pages into the essay on taste. The next one is the cultivations. Like, how do you cultivate? It gives me a very like Sauternes feel here.
Yeah. And it sounds like so that.
Very excited, but just a good thought there for me, regardless of capacity. Like, you could compare yourself to smarter people, and there are smarter people, and then you could be smarter than other people. Regardless, that's a separate thing from your need to cultivate a love of what's true and good and beautiful. And so just a nice plug there for the life of the mind, which I thought was nice.
Which fits with Sex and the City of God by Weber about properly ordered loves. So kind of neat how those things kind of dovetailed.
Yeah. And it is a nice confluence there. But all right, Tim.
Let's have a conversation about Proverbs 31.
Dude, this sounds exciting.
I haven't talked to you guys really a lot about Proverbs 31. When you think of Proverbs 31, what do you think about?
The lady who every guy is looking for,
yeah,
who's exactly. worth more than rubies and right. is industrious
right.
and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so it starts
Beauty
out.
Beauty is Hevel.
The words of King Lemuel. Yes, wrong it book. Is. It states it right at the very end.
Yes. Boop, boop.
So when we think of Proverbs 31, these are often our thoughts. Yet, Proverbs 31 begins with the words of King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. What are you doing, my son? What are you doing, son of my womb? What are you doing, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to woman, your ways to those who destroy kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, or for rulers to take strong drink, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. Give strong drink to the one who is perishing and wine to those in bitter distress. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy. An excellent wife who can find, she is far more precious than jewels. Okay, what did I read?
You read the whole first section that we usually don't think of.
Exactly.
So not the description of the woman, like everything before it.
Right. Okay. So when we think of Proverbs 31, we always think of verses 10 and following, and we kind of just kind of scan over verses 1 through 9. But actually today, I want us to look at verses 1 through 9. I'm going to ask you guys some questions, and I hope as we work through this passage, our listeners will have a better understanding of Proverbs 1 through 9, and even how it connects to Proverbs 31.
Bring it on, Tim.
And following.
Bring okay? it on.
All right. So first of all, what translations are you guys using?
I have the ESV up, which looks
like you switch to something else.
Yeah. What do you want?
I don't care.
I got the NKJV,
CSB, whatever. Pick
I got the CSB.
Okay, let me see what I've got here.
How does the CSB read verse 2?
I can do New King James.
Go for it.
If he's got CSB.
Oops. I got to get there. Sorry. Hold on.
Well, give me the New King James.
I also have to get there.
Okay. The
do
verse
you want
2.
Old King James? Shall we do that? That'll be fun.
You want care. Verse 2?
Yeah, verse 2.
What, see. My son, and what, the son of my womb, and what, the son of my vows?
Yeah, it was like, what is that talking about?
What? Mine says, CSB says, what should I say, my son? What, son of my womb? What, son of my vows?
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, nice.
It is there since from the text.
It is.
What is?
Ma, what?
Right. And as you look at the text, because it looks like, sounds like you have the Hebrew up, what do you technically have?
Question.
What? And then what follows the what?
My son. What, my son?
What, my son? That's, yes, the yeah. ESV has, what are you doing, my son? The CSB has,
what should I say, my son?
What should I say, my son? The KJV has,
what, my son?
What, my son? They're actually building very right off of the literal straight. Text. But the text is extremely terse in that there's a lot of things missing. It's just like, what, my son? And so what's the implication? There, we need a verb.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's the same yep. structure in the next two sections. It's then, what, son of my womb, and then what, son of my vows, which the CSB
mm-hmm.
is literal
yes.
there.
Yes.
It doesn't insert the I say, but it does add it in the first one for clarity. Okay, do you notice any kind of a progression in those three vocatives?
So it starts off with just as simple as can be, son.
Son.
Son of my womb.
Mm-hmm.
So origin stories.
Origin stories.
And son of my vows. So I'm assuming some allusion to the vows of marriage.
Yeah. Okay. And that's what I thought too. In fact, I've even taught it and explained it that way, but it could also be like a Hannah scenario where a mother is not able to conceive. And so what does she then do? Make
a vow.
Yeah. And maybe even several vows. And so she makes these vows. By the way, there's a whole pile of notes in the Google Doc if you guys want to pull up stuff, but whatever. Feel free to shout out. I don't know what Andy's looking at.
He's looking at a very furrowed brow. The Septuagint has like random verbs.
Oh, the Septuagint doesn't think there is a King Lemuel. So there's a bunch of issues there.
We'll skip that one this time.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll pull the Septuagint. I'm like, man, this is weird. There's like, what? These verbs aren't anywhere in the Hebrew. What is going on?
So what did the classical Greeks know anyway?
The Septuagint, we're going to talk about that. So I have a Structure of Proverbs episode that's percolating, and that's going to be part of that discussion. So they don't see a Lemuel, they translate his name. So that's why you have such a different translation in the Septuagint. Okay, so let's put that party aside and come back to what, my son? So it seems to be in inverse order. She's exhorting her son, what, my son? And then she goes back in time, son of my womb, the Lord allowed me to conceive. What, son of my vows? You are the product of a vow that I gave to God, potentially. Hmm. Okay? Hmm. I vowed this child to God. God allowed me to conceive, and now here you are. And now the exhortation is to the mother, is to the son, from the mother, to live a specific way. So this verse really introduces Proverbs 31 as a whole, and it seems to, with the three interrogatives, communicate her earnestness for her son to walk in the way of wisdom.
Hmm.
Questions, comments, nasty remarks? Okay, now verse 3. Stearns, you want to read it for us?
CSB says, don't spend your energy on women or your efforts on those who destroy kings.
Huh. Okay, what does the KJV have?
Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings.
Okay. How does this verse connect to the verse before and then the verse after? Stearns, you want to read verse 4?
It is not for kings, Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to desire beer.
Okay, so we have this woman theme in verse 3 and then this alcohol theme in verse 4. What do you have for the KJV?
It is in italics, so it's telling me it's not actually there. So not for kings, O Lemuel, not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the idea. Okay, so the first exhortation is woman, all right? And then the second is alcohol. All right, any questions? No. All right, good. Shall we keep moving?
Mm-hmm.
So now, how does he then develop the passage? What do we have then in verse 5. Stearns.
Otherwise, he will drink, forget what is decreed, and pervert justice for all the oppressed.
Okay, so why should the king not drink?
It will cause him to not rule justly. He'll forget what's important, mm-hmm. he'll not value the right things, and he'll make a bunch of mistakes.
So is a king allowed to drink any alcoholic beverage?
Well, I mean, the gamut in the CSB was to avoid wine and beer. I mean, that's like...
For the purpose of?
Ruling properly.
Okay, read verse 3 again, Carter.
Not for kings...
Sorry, verse 3.
Oh, sorry. Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings.
So what's the exhortation in verse 3?
Don't
marry.
Don't give your strength to, yeah. Yikes. It is interesting. Is it plural?
Well, because it's not an absolute prohibition against all women.
Yeah, it's against
the wrong kind of woman. Okay. Which it's not really saying, because what is it technically saying? Do not give your strength to women. And the word strength is translated energy in the
CSB.
ECSB. Okay. It's kind of interesting. And we'll talk about that some more as we work through this. But don't give your energy, your strength to women. What do you got, Stearns?
There's a cross-reference on energy to Proverbs 5:9.
Yeah. What is Proverbs 5:9?
Well, that's about the, like, putting fire in your lap and sinning, right?
That's like I don't think so.
Am I?
I think that's later. Oh, I could be wrong. Oh, you can look it up and let us know.
Yeah. Lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless, lest strangers take your fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and at the end of your life you groan and your flesh and your body are consumed. And you say, how I hated discipline. But it's talking about the wicked woman that you want to keep yourself far away from. I mean, I don't know. That's CSB's take on that. But
sure. Huh. Sure. I wonder if it's the same word for strength in Proverbs 5:9.
Yeah.
You can take a look. I didn't make that cross reference.
Charlie, you can take a look.
Found a different cross reference.
That's fine. I can.
Okay. So because it's not an absolute prohibition against all women in verse 3, is it an absolute prohibition against all drinking in verse 5? Furthermore, as you consider the ancient diet and our conversation on alcohol from months ago, what was the common beverage that was drank in the ancient world?
Wine.
Wine was. And what kind of wine was it that was drank in the ancient world?
A much diluted substance.
Right. And so you can go back to that episode and listen to that. But the prohibition here is probably not against all alcoholic beverages. The point would be to avoid intoxication. And in the ancient world, a regular Mediterranean diet with watered down wine as part of a healthy diet would have still been probably recommended even in this prohibition. Now, this was instructive for me because I have seen this and taken this as an absolute prohibition in the past. And upon studying through it, I kind of realized, no, I don't think it is an actual absolute prohibition against all wine. And that fits with my theology of alcohol and my study of alcohol. Did you find something it's you wanted to share?
Word. Same word.
So it is the same word, strength in Proverbs 5. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Excellent. Okay.
Same Hebrew word, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the Hebrew word? Do you have it there?
Chayil.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So in verse 4,
look at you.
We have this prohibition against drinking wine and strong drink. And the reason is so that they don't forget what has been decreed. Then you have this interesting command in verse 6. What do we have in verse 6, Carter?
Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish. And wine unto those that be of heavy hearts.
Okay, so there's a person that needs to get the wine, and there's a person who shouldn't get the wine. Who gets the wine?
Someone ready to die.
Somebody who's dying. Okay, and so we as Christians tend to not... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you finish your thought, and then I might
have a comment. We tend to not have a very difficult time with verse 6 because it simply seems to be exhorting Christian mercy to those who are suffering, and that we don't want people to suffer. So what do? What would we admonish or encourage or prescribe? Something to alleviate the pain. And what was an ancient means to alleviate the pain?
Alcohol.
And what kind of alcohol was it? Probably pretty strong stuff.
Yeah. Well, because it says, never mind. Ignore.
So that was what I had. Did you have a thought or something else you wanted to share?
No, I think whenever I've thought of this, I think I've thought in our current culture. So we know the signs of death very, very clearly because we can scan people and we can take blood tests. But in this day and age, a sign of death would have been extreme pain and you wouldn't have known it's going to be death or not. So it really does parallel in my mind to anesthesia or pain reliever. It really does. It makes perfect sense to me.
It does.
So
agreed. Now, what about the next verse, verse 4, or 7, sorry. Carter, you got it?
Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more.
So what's going on in verse 7?
So it's a further description of the him from verse 6. So the person who is ready to perish, the person to forget his poverty, let him have the drink.
Okay, is it the perishing person, though, or is it somebody else? Because what is the purpose of their drinking?
To forget his poverty.
To forget poverty, not pain. Poverty.
And his trouble.
I'm just assuming the him has an antecedent as a pronoun.
It's good. It's good. And remember their misery no more. What do we have in at the end of verse 7 in your translations? What do you have? Remember their misery no more.
Trouble. And the word is like care, anxiety, needs, harm.
Yep. It's actually a very Ecclesiastes word for the word misery. It's the affliction, the task which God has appointed to the man. Okay. So what is verse 7 prescribing? This becomes a bit of a issue for discussion because, you know, here he is the king and mom's saying, hey, don't you drink because you need to, you know, execute justice. You know what? There's people who can drink. Guess who gets to drink? The people who's dying and the person whose life stinks. Give them
Wow.
alcohol. their life stinks. In fact, maybe this is a good way to kind of keep the masses under control. Kind of a free beer program, baby.
So listener, if you could just see Tim's face right now, is he normally he has this like eye roll, but right now he has the most wry smile I've ever seen. And can I interrupt us real quick?
Go ahead.
Rye?
I kid you not. Oh, rye. That was good. Or hops, whatever.
Whiskey and rye.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I literally just got a text from George from Georgia, and he is the one who sent us the coffee. So this is coffee from George. And he happened to text, and he's like, hope you're having a great day. Praying for you, brother. May you guys be blessed. And I was like, hey, did you send us coffee? And he's like, it's from a place in town. I hope it savors well. Dude, shout out to Georgia, Georgia. Sorry, it's right in the middle of your time.
That
thing,
is really
funny. But like the timing is hilarious. Timing is all. We knew it. I knew it.
That was good.
Listeners, this is the greatest tradition you've ever started for us. I personally thank you. George, you're the man.
So we'll take coffee, but not wine.
Well, unless we're dying.
Well, what if we're
unless we're dying.
Or in poverty.
In poverty.
Which we, you know.
So then last year, should I have been drinking?
Hey.
Is that what you're saying, Tim?
That's what I'm playing with here.
He is playing
and I'm
with
pushing
it.
You. Because
have you ever seen
what is
a
the
cat
exhortation?
Play with a mouse that it has trapped? That's
like seriously,
Tim's
in
face.
The commentaries, you can study through this. And this is the question. Is there an advocate? Are they advocating for a free beer program? Okay. So Walkie says that he's being sarcastic, which I just struggle with that. I don't think that he's being sarcastic. It seems to be I think he's doing something different. But then what is he doing? So if you take a look at this text, go ahead. What do you got?
Well,
what do you see?
Well, hold up. So yeah, that doesn't make sense. Like, hey, just go ahead and drink it away. Yeah. None of the Bible makes sense of that.
No, it says a completely different message,
but
which is why.
What if it's like this is not for kings to do this. Like avoid that.
Uh-huh.
The ones who are in poverty, let them do that. Maybe it's like, do you want to live like a king, son? Then don't drink. Like, is that what it is? Like dress for the job you want, not the job you have? Or
I like your application, but I don't think that's what the text is
saying.
Okay,
that
sounds good.
That's okay. Let's do this.
So it's probably just more of a permissive verb. Let them drink. Because guess what? The poor people do anyway. Now, I wonder if there's anything that we can do.
Whatever. Let them do their thing.
They're just going to do their thing. But guess what?
Behave the right way.
You need to behave the right
interesting.
Way.
Interesting.
The focus isn't, hey, you know what? You need to opiate the masses. You know, free marijuana. Just kind of, you know, let them drug their way through their miserable lives and utilize their human labor for your own, you know, benefit and success. No. All right. Instead, the exhortation is you need to not drink. Because you need to not forget. And what is he supposed to not forget?
Justice.
Justice.
Like rule.
Okay, if you actually judge just with justice, then guess what's going to happen to the poor?
Oh, they're not going to be poor anymore. Tim, that's so good.
Okay. And then if they're not poor anymore, then guess what? Their lives won't be miserable. So then guess what? They won't
drink.
So
a ruler ruling poorly
affects
not just themselves,
yes,
but also those who they rule.
So you have the repetition of the verb forget in verse 5, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed. The king is not to drink because he might forget what's been decreed. What does the poor do? Let them drink and
forget
their poverty. Then you have these two imperatives in verses 8 and 9. What are the imperatives in 8 and 9, Carter?
Open thy mouth.
Open thy mouth. Okay. So what does the king want to do? Well, he wants to open his mouth. What does he want to open his mouth for?
Decree.
No, that's what he needs to open his mouth for. But what is a natural inclination that he wants to open his mouth for?
Alcohol.
I was stating that.
Isn't it beautiful? Okay. So the language that he's used here is actually shut your mouth to the alcohol and open your mouth to justice.
That is so good.
Isn't it?
Wow, that's good. That was beautiful, Tim. 10 out of 10 on the goodness scale. That was great.
Just to go back here. So then in verse 6, so the parallel of perish would be like because they're poor. It's not like... It's okay to medicinally drink to ease the pain. It's like they're ready to perish because they're poor.
Some have made that connection. I don't think so. I think that the perishing, the whole Christian mercy principle, that is an individual that you would give the strong drink or the wine to because they're in suffering. And so that's how I take it. Others disagree with me. And sure. They see the parallelism, which is what you're observing. It's a good observation, especially since you're just working off the fly here. You have the parallelism between the perishing and the bitter distress. Well, so what is the bitter distress is a poor, and I think even maybe Walkie or somebody takes the view that the perishing is, well, they're perishing because they're impoverished.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we can move on.
So how does our text here structured? Well, we have verse 3. What was verse 3 talking about again?
Spending your energy or your whatever on women.
Yeah, whatever that destroys that energy kings. Or whatever that word was. Okay. On woman, which destroys kings. Then what else is going to destroy a king's rule? His reign?
Booze.
The booze. Okay. So you have the alcohol, wine, and woman. Okay. So as you look through the structure here, you have this exhortation about woman in verse 3. Then you have this big long thing about wine, which is saying, don't drink, do justice. And it's kind of like structured in kind of a way. But then you have verse 10. And what is verse 10?
Who can find a wife of noble character?
Of noble character. Okay. Hmm. Who can find a wife of noble character is what the CSB has. You're still using the CSB?
Mm-hmm.
And then the KJV?
Who can find a virtuous woman?
A virtuous woman. What do you got?
Me.
Yeah. Oh, you can. I'm glad you found something.
Sorry.
I was wondering if he was making a Hebrew pun.
I thought he made an observation or something.
Just about myself.
Because me is an interrogative in Hebrew.
It is. Me. Who is me?
Me, Lissa.
As we noted in last week's episode, the way to get Tim to laugh is a Hebrew pun.
Horrendous.
Which there was a Hebrew pun in last week's episode that you did not catch.
I'm not surprised.
That was so good.
Anyway, let's keep going.
Okay, so moving into verse 10, this excellent wife. So who is this excellent wife? We have noble is what the CSB does. The ESV has excellent, and the KJV has virtuous. So what is the meaning of this word? What is this woman? What is the word that's there?
Chayil.
What is chayil?
Strength.
Strength. Okay, so now you added to the meaning of the word. This is actually a word that I think you, listener, would benefit from studying.
Well, it's the same word that's mentioned in verse 3.
Oh, put that together again for us, Carter.
So verse 3, give not thy chayil unto women.
Oh.
Who can find a chayil woman?
Oh. Look at the structure of the text. Go ahead, you got it?
It's almost like words can mean different things in different contexts. Oh,
sounds spicy.
Semantics. That is going to go at the front of this episode. It's going to be me saying, it's almost like words can mean different things in different contexts. And then Tim, spicy.
But, welcome to the Thinkling Spot.
Guys are horrendous.
Anyway, okay, let's keep going.
Okay, but think through it and look at the text, okay? Is it saying something different? Now, your English translations all translated it differently. Energy.
Yeah.
And then they say noble character. There's a woman who takes chayil, and there's a woman who creates chayil. And Lemuel needs to find a woman who creates chayil, not takes chayil.
Huh.
So you're saying that virtuous would be a bad translation then?
No, I think that's one aspect of the word. It's so some words in Hebrew don't correspond well to English because they do encompass multiple ideas. So, for example, chesed is one of those words. It means covenant faithfulness. It means loving kindness. It means like I'm going to do what I said I was going to do, even if you don't All right. It has a broad semantic range, and that broad semantic range encompasses the idea of the word. So there is a word study logical fallacy called a complete totality transfer, where you take one meaning of a word and then you impose it upon every use.
Yeah.
And so what we're complaining about mm-hmm. with spicy is that somebody is saying...
We're not complaining.
Okay, well, what we're playing with the mm-hmm. whole spicy thing is that there's one...
Jocularity.
There we go. We're one meaning of the word, and then they're imposing it upon all of those different uses of the word. And they're accusing... And some of you mm-hmm. says, well, spicy only has a sexual connotation. That always is what it means. No, it can just mean that the food is hot or whatever else, okay? And you're committing a word study fallacy of a complete totality transfer word study fallacy by imposing that meaning on other things. But that's actually not the idea of chayil, because chayil in itself has the idea of physical strength, of financial strength, of virtue, of just like honor, like an honorable individual. So Boaz is a man of chayil in Ruth 2. Ruth is a woman of chayil in Ruth 3. And the woman who takes chayil takes the strength, energy, wealth, substance mm-hmm. of a man mm-hmm. and destroys.
Wow.
Whereas the woman who creates chayil builds him up.
Wow.
The contrast here is between these two women. And I think that this text is structured like ABBA, with the alcohol thing being in the middle, and then the woman who takes chayil in verse 3 with the woman who creates chayil in verses 10 through 31. And what is then the description of the woman of chayil? Obviously, I didn't really intend to deal with the woman of chayil in today's lesson, except yeah. I did. I just provided the foundation for what she is and who she is and what does she do. She creates chayil, literally, like wealth. And how does she do that? Mm-hmm. She's a woman of strength. Go ahead.
So I'm wondering if there, because it is also not, do you think it's a mom saying, don't waste your time on all the women, find the one woman? I mean, it is women, plural, in verse 3, and then it is singular.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like, in this culture, every king is going to be married.
Yes.
And the propensity of the king to misuse his position would be for mirth and folly. So he could, like Solomon, could or go both. Chasing all the women mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. just focus on the one
sure.
that he already has.
Or focus on actually being a king.
Yeah.
So that which destroys kings is the description of the woman in verse 3. So you think through also a Belshazzar, wine and woman.
Yeah.
Think through Xerxes
yep.
with Esther. Mm-hmm. He's got the big party, wine and woman. Yep. Okay, so you have this theme throughout the ancient world. Mm-hmm. And what is it that men want? Wine and woman, mm-hmm. pleasure, mm-hmm. sex. That's what he should not do because he is a king, and a king doesn't use his power and authority to make for himself a fun life. He's mm-hmm. supposed to use his power and authority to judge righteously, to create wealth for his kingdom, and a godly woman's going to help him do that.
I just think of all the politicians who in the, like, just look at the last 50 years of politicians who a scandal happens, and what is it? It's totally wine or women.
Exactly.
It's that. It's they sent a picture to someone, they got right. caught with someone,
right.
they got drunk and did something,
yep.
and then you got people. A recent president is he's like a teetotaler. He'll yeah. never drink. And I'm just saying, like, it's interesting. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. So as we kind of wrap things up, because time is flying by, we haven't really studied this Proverbs 31 woman. And I've already talked about her a fair amount, and I might just kind of work through the whole Proverbs 31. I'm just going to give you two observations. One, verses 11 and 12 are introductory. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. Then verses 13 through 18 focus on her material production. And how does she produce things? Well, verse 17, she dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. In other words, This gets into a biblical theology of femininity, a biblical theology of womanhood. What does a woman do? She can do things. And that the responsibility even of a husband is not necessarily just to create an easy life for his wife, but that he might utilize her strengths for the glory of God. And we see that developed in that first section. And then the final section kind of, Walke says it's a chiasm, and it centers around verse 23. Verse 23 states, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. I'll kind of just end with this one. You know, sometimes, you know, a day for my wife is pretty, you know, mundane. At the end of the day, you know, everybody's still alive and they've all eaten food. And that's a mission accomplished. You know, they made it to violin lessons or trombone lessons or whatever. But while that might seem a little bit mundane for her life, because she's been faithful and done what she needed to do at the home, what has that then allowed me to do not at home? I've been able to go and to minister and to serve. And even yesterday, as we were reflecting and we were reflecting upon the day, and my wife didn't have a very productive day, I realized myself, guess what I need to do? I need to encourage her. And how can I encourage her? By telling her the things that I was able to do. I was able to be used by the Lord in the lives of four young men. I was able to effectively minister and serve. Why was I able to do all of those things?
Because of her.
Because of her. And guess what? She then gets that. She can see that value. All right. And so, you know, just kind of think through. You guys, we are just so ridiculous and horrendous here. The Be Real went off right in the middle of my episode. So what do we have to do? We got to take these silly pictures. Anyway, there we go. I got my Be Real posted. So what does my wife do? She takes care of the home. So then I can post my Be Real in the middle of a Thinklings podcast episode. Okay. And it's a team. We're a team.
Yep.
And so think through that, whether you're a mother, a wife, and you're ministering and serving and seeming to do nothing and getting nothing done, you're enabling your husband to do the mission that God's allowed him to do. And guys, let's remember to encourage our wives and appreciate the assistance that they provide for us in doing those quote-unquote mundane things that aren't that mundane. I don't have time to develop that in the rest of this text. Okay, she's doing things that are super important. Encourage her with the things that she does do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.